that we would complete the remainder of the presenters for today on the mining charter. As you would know, in terms of the program, you were supposed to be dealing with the public hearings on beneficiation. But the decision was taken that we need to rather complete the list of the mining charter so that we are able to work out our own conclusions on the subject matter, having listened to everybody that have indicated an interest to participate on this matter. And the second reason is that which resulted in us shifting beneficiation to next term, because this term is coming to an end before the end of September, is that we have subpoenaed the Alexco Development Foundation. As you would recall, they have been refusing to come to Parliament and left us, and therefore left us with no alternative but to invoke the provisions of the Constitution. We are informed that the Sheriff of the Court has served the subpoena on Alexco Development Foundation Friday, last week, and that we are expecting them to be here next week, Wednesday, which would have then interrupted our program in terms of the public hearings on beneficiation. So we would deal with them next week, and thereafter, if they do not pitch up again, while legal processes are unfolding, we would then be handling the discussion, the outstanding discussion on the oversight trip, the study tour basically, on the state-owned mining company. That's one issue. The second issue related to housekeeping matters is that we had an oversight last week in Limpopo. Members who were there had quite a nasty experience in terms of the preparations for the trip, in terms of the actual trip itself, the manner in which we have been handled by the travel agent and the support arrangement within Parliament. As a result, we have invited the manager from the committee section to be here, Mr. Mtetwa, Mr. Mkize, I'm sorry. He then made a request that instead of coming to the committee to listen to the displeasures of members of Parliament in terms of how they were handled, he would rather, together with his manager, have a meeting with the chairperson and the whip and to deal with the matter. In fact, they made that request since last night, and again early this morning they gave me a call to plead that they would like that as a first port of call, let's handle it in that fashion. I agree to that request. I find it to be reasonable, and I agree to it. I acceded to that request. Now, what I would want us to do very quickly is to then list some of these issues that are troubling us without necessarily discussing them, so that myself and this other member, I think in the place of the whip, we will discuss who could best articulate the position, because unfortunately the whip was deployed elsewhere during that period, and therefore would want somebody who was part of the trip to basically then be part of that. And indeed, let's run quickly on those matters. I'll allow you to basically raise those issues, and we will take a list of them, and I've demanded that therefore the meeting must be this afternoon. Honorable Lucas.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering whether, because this is an internal issue, shouldn't it be treated outside this house instead of us discussing it in this forum? I think it would be treated better, especially because you are also going to be seeing the head of the people concerned.
Yes, what are the other views? Honorable Bigari.
Morning and thank you, Chairperson. The issue of our experiences in Limpopo is not a matter for yourself, the whip, outside the concerned members. We were there as a committee. And I think the conclusions we made out of our experiences necessitated that we must be able to address committee section based on the history we have on dissatisfactions of the way we are being served as a committee. Yes, I will agree to what Honorable Lucas is saying, that we must do this outside the present forum. We as a committee with them this afternoon. What I will not agree to is that the meeting must entail particular people outside the rest of the committee. We want to be part of that meeting because we have our dissatisfactions that we want to allay ourselves. We are also being serviced by Parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Very much, Honorable Mare, followed by Honorable Son.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would suggest that we maybe, after we've taken everybody's left, that only the committee members remain and we discuss it then in total. And it's not only this experience, it's also previous experiences. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Son.
Chairperson, likewise, I would want the committee section to look us in the eye when we are venting out our anger or our frustration on this matter. And I agree with the members that are saying that it's an internal matter. After these public hearings, the committee section should come and see the committee, not the chairperson and the witness. Thank you very much.
Let it so be agreed that at the end of this process, we then request them to join us. We will try and facilitate that during the break. Where's your assistant? Can you call Mr. Kivis, yes, please? Yeah. And then back to the program. We're expecting to, just before we get in there, we seem to be having difficulty in terms of getting the organization called SAWIMA to come before the portfolio committee. I think we've tried in several occasions to get them to talk to us as SAWIMA. Unfortunately, they have not been able to do so. And we've got reasonable suspicion that things might not be going as expected in that organization. So as a result, we would suggest that we call them within our program in the next term, together with DMR, because we believe that they were formed under the auspices of DMR. We'll get to know what role did DMR play, what were the expectations of DMR in terms of the functioning of SAWIMA, what funds have been used in the formation and the running of SAWIMA, so that at the end we know, is this organization in existence, or are we talking about individuals who, by the way, are not in a position thus far to appear before the committee and take us into their confidence in terms of their operation. It's important. The reason why it is so important is because Mining Charter itself mentions in its provisions a number of areas relating to women. You talk ownership structure, you talk women. You talk employment equity arrangement, you talk women. So unfortunately they are therefore not here, and we would then provide for them in our program. So I just want to alert you to that so that DMR can prepare itself so long so that they can address us on the functioning or otherwise of SAWIMA. Then back into our program, we are expected to listen to women in mining in Western Cape. Are they here? Not yet. Women in mining in Mpumalanga, are they here? You're here. Northern Cape, are they part of this? Where are they here? So Mpumalanga, you are here. There is a request here from a person who represents Bravura. Is it Bravura? That she's got some international flights to connect, and would you be willing to give her an opportunity? Press your mic there. Yes? Okay. Introduce yourself, madam, and speak to us.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, chairperson, members of parliament. My name is Alana Bond. I'm from an organization called Bravura. I head up the Sustainable Development Division of Bravura, and thank you very much for inviting me to speak here this morning and also for giving me the opportunity to speak first so that I can try and make my international flights later. I know that we are running behind schedule and that everyone wants to have a chance to have their say, so I'm not going to bore you with details of who we are. We do, however, have extensive experience in the area of black economic empowerment, broad-based black economic empowerment, and in particular the mining charter. We work with a number of large organizations in South Africa, and we therefore feel that we have quite a good view of how mining companies are viewing the mining charter, as well as some of the issues that have arisen. My starting point here this morning is to say, what are South Africa's desperate needs? And as a result of these desperate needs, what should transformation and what should the mining charter be all about? And I mean, we have many needs, but I'm focusing on the key ones that I think are, and that I'm sure you will agree, are critical. And they are education and the development of our people, sustainable access to the economy for all of our people, creating jobs, and not just menial jobs, but sustainable jobs for people.
Can we just get on par with you? Do we have this presentation?
You have a mining charter submission from me, but not this presentation. Yeah, I'm sorry, I wasn't aware that it needed to be sent in advance. Then we have the issues of poverty alleviation that we need to focus on, and finally, local economic development for the people of South Africa. The mining charter is absolutely critical in addressing these needs. Mining is a significant portion of our GDP, somewhere between 8-10% direct and up to 10% indirect. In addition, mining takes place largely in remote areas within South Africa, mostly rural-based, sometimes peri-urban-based, and therefore one is dealing with large communities that are in these rural areas. We also have high poverty and unemployment in these areas, and as a result, there's the potential for the sector to make enormous impact. And in our view, the mining charter's got a lot more teeth than other BEE legislation, which is fantastic, but it could be better focused on having a sustainable impact on some of South Africa's biggest needs. What I want to highlight this morning are three key challenges that we see as being issues within the mining charter. The first is that the procurement element of the mining charter is not broad-based and it's not focused on sustainable transformation, and therefore it is open to abuse and fronting. Secondly, enterprise development is barely mentioned in the mining charter and actually not directly measured. And thirdly, ownership is not delivering broad-based benefits. What I'm going to do is I'm going to have a look at these three items in just a little bit more detail. On the procurement side, just because a business has some black ownership does not necessarily mean that it's contributing to broad-based BEEL transformation in this country. Ownership measurement does not necessarily measure the critical issues that we face in this country. And some of the unintended consequences of focusing solely on ownership for suppliers to the mining sector is that there is a narrow-based approach. We all agree the mining charter itself is broad-based, but when it comes to suppliers to the mining sector, which as you can see from an indirect perspective is potentially 10% of our GDP, it's actually very narrow-based. What results is that it's prone to fronting and abuse, tenderpreneurship, and what could be called BEE money laundering. These issues are getting a lot of press at the moment. Certainly the DTI is, there's a bill that's in progress of being updated. Fronting is intended to be made illegal. These are critical issues that we're facing. The other issue with the just measuring ownership on suppliers to the mining sector is that really few people benefit. We're not really seeing the communities out in the mining sector benefit. We're not really seeing the employees benefit from it. There's also a compliance focus, and I really can attest to having seen this because I'm operating in the space. And when you deal with large suppliers to the mining sector, their view is, particularly if the vast majority or all of their income is coming from the mining sector, they actually question directly, blatantly, why should we even bother with the DTI codes? The focus becomes then on ownership only, and because ownership is expensive and costs them a lot of money, they feel like they shouldn't bother doing any bull-based items. Some of the mining clients that I've worked for have actually had some of their suppliers say to them, why should we build the school that we were going to build when it doesn't count for us? Now, we all agree that having a compliance mindset isn't helping transformation in South Africa, but the reality is that we need to make sure that the legislation is actually driving the right behavior and focusing on the right things. In addition, there's insufficient focus on local versus imports and the value added local manufacturers provide to the economy. Even if they don't have ownership, they might be adding a whole lot more benefits to the economy as opposed to an entity here which might have black ownership but is just importing goods and services. And they are actually being favored over and above local manufacturers, which just can't be right. I'm going to come back, given the time frames, I'm going to come back to the overall recommendations at the end, which really are covered here bit by bit. Then we come to the issue around enterprise development. Now, the mining charter currently has an element called preferential procurement and enterprise development. And please, I must emphasize, procurement is not the same thing as enterprise development. It's not. There is no other mention of enterprise development in the mining charter other than that there is a definition for enterprise development. Under the procurement element, there is a social fund which multinational suppliers of capital goods are supposed to contribute to. However, that fund is marked for community development. Now, what does community development mean? The mining charter doesn't make that clear. And really, this fund could be very much more clearly focused on holistic enterprise development, the building up of black-owned businesses that are in mine communities that can actually be developed and grown and linked into those mine communities, linked into the mine supply chains, which ultimately talks to the sustainability and the growth of the local economies out in the mining areas. We believe it's very important to set clear targets and identify the clear need for enterprise development. It's not good enough just to have it in the social and labour plans that are governed under the MPRDA. On the ownership front, touched on this earlier, there are too few the issues are similar with suppliers to the mining sector, but in this case, there are too few people benefiting from the BEE deals in the mining space. And those that benefit are often not actually physically involved in the mining of those mines. Thus, the way that ownership has been implemented so far, we strongly believe is actually a factor in the calls for nationalization here in South Africa. Mining companies and other players are also, unfortunately, fairly reluctant to undertake BEE deals with mine communities. There are challenges with dealing with communities. There are challenges with local governance structures and local leadership. However, that's not a good enough reason not to do it. We need to overcome those issues, and we need to really be encouraged to include communities. The potential positive impact of including community involvement when it's done well is hugely, hugely underestimated. The Royal Bafokeng King is a key example of this, of where it's been done well and it's making a difference. Employee share ownership schemes, we believe, do have a place, but frankly, I don't believe that they're a mechanism for either wealth creation or for true transformation. And the majority of the benefits flowing to employees really could be focused more broadly, for example, on providing education for employees' children, on things like that that are actually going to have an impact on the critical needs that South Africa faces. Given the constraints of time, I'm not going to go through the other general recommendations around beneficiation and mine community development and employment equity. You know, I've gone through the key issues. I'm sure other people are going to touch on what they think and feel is most important. It is, however, summarized in the executive summary of the report that we provided to Parliament. And if there is time, I'd be happy to answer any questions on this. I just want to make two points at this point here. The first thing is that the mining charter is not clear in terms of exactly which entities it applies to. It becomes very grey when you start having contractors that are on site, contractors that are actually managing mine operations for holders of mineral rights. You know, that really could require clarity. And then secondly, the focus of mine community development really needs to be more holistic and more inclusive. Just to come to a summary of key recommendations. Firstly, in terms of procurement, we believe that the mining charter should require a broad-based BEE contribution from potential suppliers, preferably under the DTI codes, because that's an industry which is already established and an industry which has a clear verification industry, and one can check that people are doing what they actually say that they're doing. Secondly, setting clear targets and measures for enterprise development that goes beyond just the foreign multinational capital goods suppliers' contribution to a community fund. Thirdly, encouraging mining companies to adopt a holistic, integrated, and strategic approach to community development and to work with each other to impact communities. I really believe that if mines start working together as opposed to focusing on their own businesses and their own operations, given the number of mines that are clustered, the number of communities that are clustered around clusters of mines, the impact on South Africa as a whole could really be significant. Prospecting and mining licenses and the selling of mine assets should be granted to real operating entrepreneurs, and as opposed to individuals who might be looking to make a quick buck. Unfortunately, the black entrepreneurs of South Africa are actually disadvantaged when we have numerous people just applying for licenses that then get sold off after some studies have been done. What we really need in this country are real black-owned mines that are being operated by those individuals. Then any further ownership transactions in the mining sector should, in our opinion, be entirely broad-based, focused on employees, labour-sending areas, and mining communities. That's obviously aside from the entrepreneurs who are actually going to mine mines. But let them mine mines. Let them not be minority shareholders in some mine that is already operating. And then finally, the mining sector needs to move away from a compliance mindset to one of strategic transformation, where there's a focus on the real benefits of transformation and the real need for transformation. And, you know, hopefully government can find a way to really encourage the sector to do that, rather than checking boxes and saying that they're spending money, whereas the impact really might be minimal. Thank you very much for your time.
The summary of recommendations that you have just presented, is it contained in your submission? I've been looking for it, I can't find it.
There's not a summary of recommendations as listed here. What I've tried to do is summarize it even further for today's session. However, you'll find a summary of recommendations in the executive summary of my report. Some things have been updated over the last 6 months given the change in time frames.
Are you going to get a copy of that?
Yes, Chairperson. I will send it through to Nolatando today.
Excellent. Honourable members, there you are. Bravura. Let's engage. Honourable Bigani.
I think the presentation was a good presentation for further reference, but I'd just like to know from Bravura Consulting in particular, how are they then trying to contribute or to improve the situations mentioned and related to the issues of the mining charter in a parallel form to the relevant changes that are needed within the department, because obviously changes are not going to be overnight. But you, with you being a standing enterprise or company, obviously you also have your own commitments to make in relation to especially what we normally talk of as our social labor plan. And with the good ideas that you've put forth, of course, that you've presented, which was probably a lot of us would support, I'd really be interested in knowing you as Bravura Consulting, how are you trying to make ends meet to be seen to be mending and actually commending what should be in government in relation to what is not yet reflecting within the mining charter? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for the question. First of all,
one, you note those questions. Honorable Sonto, Honorable Luca. Just note
that. The question is noted.
Thank you very much, Sir. I must thank the presentation as well. The way it critically analyzes the charter is quite plausible, I must say. But only a few areas that I wanted more an in-depth clarity on. When you talk about mine community development, really that's a critical area, and you are saying it should be more focused and more inclusive. Would you expatiate on that, so that at least as people are playing oversight on that, we go there understanding what the view of Bravura, or I nearly said Bravura is saying. That is one. Measuring community development. I'm concentrating on community. Measuring community development. What yardstick would you advise that should be included in the charter to address the desired need in your view? One would want to understand that. I think let me pause there. But we would like to have those questions. I mean, that presentation is going to assist us a great deal. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you, Honorable Lucas, followed by Honorable Khululu.
Thank you. I guess the important issue you raised was about black-owned mines. And I think this is very important and elementary and something that should be done. Oh, yeah, Dharma. I said the issue of black-owned mines. We need this, and this is what should happen, that this will cause transformation. But we have the major problem, and you never mention it, and that's finance. You can get a prospecting license, but you cannot. It's not easy to obtain a mining right. So. If there's some solutions in this way, what can be done? How can we do this? Where we can be equal partners, even you get someone in. A joint venture should be 51 for black and 49 for the other party. So if you could come up with something there, I would really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khululu.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also add my voice to say that the presentation was clear. But for me, it's a bit difficult to comment or ask questions in the absence of the presentation. Hopefully, you said you're going to send us a what. But I see there's another one here. What is this one?
That is the original submission to the mining charter. This presentation is a summary of that and highlighting just a few selected issues.
Nevertheless, it's fine. I was just trying to get through to this one, actually. I see the only question of beneficiation, actually, on this one. I don't know whether it's still the position with the new presentation that you are going to submit to us. You are saying here this element should be divorced from the charter. That's the part that I don't understand. The question of the beneficiation. Because in the mining charter, actually, beneficiation is part of that, isn't it? So that here it is said that it should be divorced from the charter. I just want to see clarity on that one. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Would you care to respond to that?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to have to be fairly brief. I need to leave in about 7 or 8 minutes, otherwise I'm going to miss my flight. But let me try and answer each of the questions to the best of my ability. Firstly, in terms of what are we doing, we are doing everything that we can to work with our clients to change mindsets, first of all. We actually work with them to focus on achieving real transformation as opposed to checking boxes and compliance. That's a key area of focus of ours. The other thing that we do is we really spend a lot of time strategically thinking on how we can integrate elements of the mining charter together to actually make an impact on communities and South African society. Because at the moment, people look at the elements in a very sort of silo-based focus, and that's also the nature of the way organizations are structured. They're so large that they have to have certain functions. So everyone, you know, looks at, if you're focusing on procurement, you're sitting in supply chain. If you're focusing on community development, you're sitting in social affairs, whatever the case might be. We're trying to get our clients to think holistically about these things. That's one example. Another example is also when we work with suppliers to the mining sector, again, we're trying to change the mindsets that it's not just about checking a box and getting black ownership or HDSA ownership or whatever it might be. Those of who are saying that they shouldn't do board-based because there's no incentive to do it, again, we're encouraging them because we believe that without actually transforming, that none of us are going to have businesses in 10 or 15 years' time. On a personal level, perhaps, as opposed to from the actual work that we do, we have some very interesting ideas around holistic community development, which goes to your question, sir, that we have actually applied to the job funds for in terms of funding to actually pilot one of these ideas and see how it might work in one of the communities. That really is about a community interaction which is holistic. And it starts at the grassroots level, which is really based on engaging communities and not going in and telling them what they need, engaging with them to see what their assets are and what they believe that they need, through to grassroots interventions at a microfinance kind of level, through to interventions that are going to focus on enterprise development and building small businesses and bigger businesses. Because at the end of the day, it is the business creation through real entrepreneurs in those communities that are going to create jobs and are going to create sustainable jobs. That's what most people are looking for. They're looking for jobs. That then flows through to supplier development, where you can actually develop suppliers to the extent that they can actually be part of a mine supply chain. Once they become part of a mine supply chain, you've got economic benefits that start flowing into that community. And provided that if you're a catering company, you're not buying your fruit and vegetables from Johannesburg, or Cape Town's a bad example in the mining industry, but from Johannesburg, you want to source your fruit and vegetables from a farm that's there in the area. Why? Because you need the money to keep flowing within that actual local community. So for us, it's about that holistic approach. And as I mentioned earlier, people have a very silo-based approach to this whole thing, and we're trying to change those mindsets. Just coming back, so hopefully that answers a little bit on community development. To come back also to your questions on what are we personally doing, we do a lot in our personal capacity around these things as well. For example, I sit on a microfinance institute, the board of a microfinance institution in White River, which is doing some phenomenal work in terms of making microloans to black women in rural areas, providing them with grassroots mentorship and support so that they can actually generate small businesses and get themselves and their families out of poverty. And as a matter of interest, when it comes to measuring, the way that that's measured is based on the number of children in school, the number of meals that they get a day, is there a clean toilet, do they have a bed to sleep in. So that starts talking to some aspects of measuring community development as well. I'm sorry, I know I'm answering the questions in an integrated fashion. But when it comes to measuring community development, there could be a couple of ideas there. And again, we don't have too much time, but one idea, which is not mine, a very good one though, is actually issuing currency in a different note to communities so that they can allow them to buy from each other and seeing the impact that actually happens in those communities and how wealth is built up and then over time transitioning to normal rands and cents. That could be quite an interesting way of measuring. Another way of measuring is certainly in the space of supplier development and enterprise development. If you can measure if a mine is increasing its local procurement, its localized procurement from small businesses in those communities, that already talks to the fact that your community development is working. But you need to make sure that your social and labor plans are integrated and government is integrated and that your socio-economic development spend is on infrastructure and other things that actually support whatever those businesses are that are going to integrate into the supply chain. So it needs to be a holistic approach. I just want to see what other questions there were for a moment. There was one on beneficiation. Yes, I will leave in a moment.
Let's do this, because, you know, it's unfortunate that you have the time tied up. There are a lot of questions, and you can't engage with us on those places. If you keep looking on your watch, I don't think it's going to work.
All right.
Not going to work, because... For instance, you say you've been in existence for 5 years, providing consultancy, work to your clients.
Yes.
And yet, transformation, as far as we're told by DMR and other stakeholders, is not taking place. What role are you playing? Why are your customers not transforming? Because they're not listening to your advices.
Unfortunately, yes.
Your understanding of PE as well on your ownership structure, you're talking about PE deals should apply only to employee schemes, communities, and actual producing entrepreneurs, which goes really in the opposite direction in terms of the national objectives. Because you are narrowing it to a particular group of people as opposed to open a project to historically disadvantaged South Africa. So I'm saying to you, there's a lot that we need to engage you on. And if you are in a rush, we're not going to be able to do that. There's no justice we'll do on your presentation. And unless you revise yourself. For instance, if you had sent somebody else.
There is no one else I could have sent, Chairperson. There is unfortunately no one else I could have sent. No one would have been able to do justice to any questions and answers. The knowledge capital lies with me at this point in time.
Okay. So I think we're in what we're stuck now. If you are to leave,
yes, I do need to go now.
We would ask you to then leave, but understanding that we have not exhausted engagement with yourself.
Absolutely. I'd be very pleased to have a chance to engage further with yourself. And thank you very much for your time. If anyone would like individual answers to the questions that they asked, I'd be happy for another Tandor to have him contact me. My details are also on the presentation that you'll receive.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Let's get... There's
no skills transfer.
Sorry?
There's no skills transfer.
Well, I don't know if the company is running on a one-person basis. You're right. She says the knowledge base is with her, and there's nobody else in Bravura that could talk to these issues. So I think let's grant her that benefit of doubt. Yeah. Okay. Right. Can I ask the women groupings to be together, and we would listen to your presentation right through, starting from. Are the ones in Western Cape already here? Okay, come forward. The ones in Mpumalanga, let them join you there. And the ones in Northern Cape, please join each other there. Eh? Who's so shy now? what we are going to ask you to do, as women in mining, I would want you to sit together and agree among yourselves who would start. But we'll listen to all your presentation. In the meantime, whilst you are sharing your notes, let's allow the J. Rocha Consulting Group to talk to us. And also, we want your written submissions given to Noltando so that we can have copies of your document. Over to you, J. Rocha.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I have the written document presented to you. I have a presentation, and I have a summary of that presentation. So as we are moving with you, I had to shorten the version of my presentation due to time constraints, because we were allocated 20 minutes only. So you have with you the longer version of the presentation. And the reason why I shortened it is to give you more time to ask questions. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Chair, before we start, can we just go back on stressing the importance of us getting documents at least a day before? Because we are unable to, as members, to scrutinize the documents ourselves so that we can be more participatory when we get here this morning. I see that process is moving backwards again. It needs to be stressed that it's really important for us. We read these documents if people think that we don't read them. And our participation is an improved participation with knowledgeable information the night before. Could that please change, because it's a problem?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think in the context of talking about transformation, I want to take you back 500 years ago and quote something that was said by Machiavelli. And I'll just summarize it. And one of the things that he said 500 years ago was, when you are dealing with change, there are two types of people that you are going to encounter. There are those who benefited from the previous system that are going to resist it, but there are also those who are going to benefit from the change, who are also going to participate in the undermining of that change. Now, when we talk about being in South Africa, we must always bear this two in mind, that there are those who are going to resist, and there are those who are going to front. Now, I'm going to look at very quickly at some of the elements of the both the original those who benefited from the past will resist it. You'll then find amongst those who are going to benefit from the change, who are going to undermine it. Those who are not going to benefit from the change, they will not have a view possibly, or they'll fight against the change.
Okay.
Now, oftentimes we talk about ownership. And if one looks at both the MPRDA and the charter as it was originally intended, the broad-based element of the charter and the definition of BEE in the MPRDA was at the level of the seven pillars. Unfortunately, over time, it has been changed into broad-based ownership. It's no longer broad-based empowerment as it was originally intended. But then people started focusing on ownership specifically. And I know that what I'm going to say may be controversial, but this is in the nature of wanting to address change, there are certain realities that one has to deal with. Broad-based ownership, in other words, an ownership where there are many people, it is politically sound. It is easy to sell it to the public and say, we have broad-based ownership, all of you are going to be owners. But it is a commercially a disaster. You can talk to BEs who are currently involved in the mining sector, and they will tell you the experiences that they face. Now, why is it a disaster? When you bring a lot of people to participate in one transaction, it creates conflict. It is a reality that we don't want to deal with. That is why I started by saying it is politically sound, but it is commercially a disaster. But it is also socially misleading. And we hear people bending around the word we have not benefited. The question is, for example, few years ago, and I'm taking you out of mind, there was MTN invited black people to buy shares in MTN. And I think in order for you to get 400 shares, you have to pay 50,000 rand. Which poor person is going to be able to buy those shares? Now, you bought the shares, you then become a shareholder in MTN. Then they declare dividends. And every so often when they declare dividends based on the share price, you may get then 1,000 rand a year. Is it what we call then benefit? That we say that because it is broad-based ownership, that we want everybody else to benefit. As I say, it is politically good, commercially a disaster, and socially misleading. Now, when we look at the way in which it is measured, and we have seen the different method formula that were presented to you here, the department said it's 9%, the Chamber of Mines said it's 28%, some that say it is 4.5%, and 2.5%. We are dealing here with a different way of measuring the same thing. Let's take the example by Samda. Samda used market capitalization, which is basically looking at the shares issued by a company listed, multiplied by the share price of that company on that day. And then, in other words, they were assessing the value of the shares held by BEE. Now, value of shares held and ownership are not the same. It's like, for example, if you want to find, in terms of housing development in South Africa, and you go and say, the value of houses owned by blacks in South Africa is 10 billion, and the value of houses owned by whites is 20 billion, it is not telling you how many houses do black own, nor is it telling you how many houses do white own. It is just telling you the value. So it is the reason why I'm raising this, it is because we so-called experts, we come here and throw around many figures. And unfortunately, we then don't indicate to the portfolio committee what is the formula that we are using for us to get to that figure. Now, for the purpose of the committee, it is important that you know that a mining company is assessed because it has a mining right. That one is the starting point. Now, it is then at the level of that company that you then will ask, what is your equity level? Is it a 15%? Is it a 26%? Is it 51% or is it more? It is at the level of a mining company. Now, there are companies who have transacted at the level of holding companies, and there are companies that have transacted at the level of operating companies. Especially the major mining companies, they tend to have holding companies and operating companies. So we have to understand that structure of the mining companies. It's also not correct just to look at the Chamber of Mines as the representative of the mining industry, because there are companies that are smaller and may not necessarily be members of the Chamber of Mines. So when one looks at the chamber of mind, you'll have to say that you are representing a figure, possibly, that relates to your member. And they don't necessarily reflect what is happening in the mining sector as a whole. In other words, including the small-scale miners, the junior miners, and the large miners. And I think this is one of the differences between the department and the industry. I'm not vying for the figures presented by the department, but I think the figures presented by the department were a little bit broader than the ones presented by the Chamber of Mines. Having listened to the Chamber of Mines, they are looking at 33 members of the Chamber of Mines. The figures in the department are far bigger than this. The key question that one has to ask is, how were these figures measured? What methodology were used? Which then leads me to the issue that there is a need for one to have one repository of this data where one can then access and analyze it from one place. For instance, we have the SPECSSA, where everybody knows figures on population comes from SPECSSA. What we then do as consultants, as experts, we analyze those figures. But in terms of methodology, there is one. This is what we don't have around the ownership issue in the mining industry. This figure that I have here is just to show the challenge that we have around broad-based. I know it is government policy, but it's also time, since the portfolio committee called for a hearing, it is time that we question and ask questions around that which we all of us like and support. And the example that I'm giving here, it is not based on any statistics, just a graph that I have for purpose of illustration. Normally, the transactions that you have, as allowed in the mining charter, is you'll find a non-HDSA with the majority stake. And that non-HDSA, let's say 75%, and no one worries to the extent to which that non-HDSA is broad-based. In other words, broad-based in terms of ownership. So we accept that Wong Yang and his wife and his children own 74% or 75%. Nobody questions about it. But when it comes to the HDSA, this is where we start worrying about broad-based ownership. And I'm talking about the ownership level. Now, even within that broad-based ownership, the structure is there is an anchor partner. And then there are others. And those others may be youth, communities, churches, and everybody else. And we all clap our hands and say, this is broad-based. But we forget the fact that we are allowing one individual and his family to take majority stake, and nobody questions about it. We always focus the extent to which this portion that is smaller, to what extent is the smaller portion carrying more people? And ignore the bigger portion and say, no, that one is fine. Now the question is, in this system here, who's being advantaged? Who's benefiting? Is it this one that is getting a smaller piece of the pie, and then that small piece has to be cut into another small piece, or is it this one here? These are questions that we have to start asking ourselves if we want to improve the quality of empowerment that we get. And that is why at the beginning I said broad-based ownership is politically sound, but there are questions that we have to start asking ourselves if we want to improve the regulatory instrument that we have. Remember, I'm saying improve. I'm not saying doing away with it. It is about improving what we have rather than doing away with it. On the procurement front, there are challenges that we have to recognize. And the challenges are, it is the licensee, in other words, the holders of the mining rights, that have the obligation to comply with the mining charter and the MPRDA itself. Indirectly then, the MPRDA introduced the concept of there are companies that supply services to the mining sector. And by that way, impose an obligation on the mining company that is the holder to ensure that in the process of obtaining services from other suppliers, that the issue of transformation is also brought to bear. There are challenges, and one has to recognize that. Now, the questions that we have to ask is, how is the department going to monitor that? This is a third party. So there is the department here, there is the licensee here, and then there is a third party that says a direct relationship with the mining company. No direct relationship with the department. It is a relationship with the mining company. So how are we going to monitor that? Now, how will the department know that the information coming from the third party to the company that has a relationship with the department is the correct one? Now, in the revised charter, there is this element of social development fund. But it is a social development fund that is contributed, whose contribution comes from companies outside South Africa. Now, there are two challenges here. How are you going to regulate a Canadian company or a Norwegian company that supplies heavy equipment to a South African company and say you have to contribute to a social development fund in South Africa? Remember, the relationship is between the department and the mining company. This is a company based in Norway. How are you going to say you in Norway, through this company here, you must contribute to this fund in South Africa? The next problem that you have is potentially a constitutional problem. In terms of the Constitution, Section 77 of the Constitution dealing with a money bill. A money bill can only deal with matters relating to imposition of levies, taxes. You don't deal with any other issue. That is why with the MPRDA, you found that there is the MPRDA and the legislation that deals with imposition of royalties is the Royalties Act. It's not the MPRDA. So we have a provision here that says companies must contribute 5%. Now, that 5% can be construed to be an imposition of a levy, which can then potentially bring a constitutional problem. So the department will have to look into that, on how to deal with that issue. One, there are two issues that they have to deal with. One is, how are they going to make sure that a company that is based in Canada, USA, Norway, that supply services to a mining company in South Africa, is going to contribute to that fund? And if they are going to contribute to that fund, in terms of which piece of legislation? Because even if we are putting the constitutionality issue aside, if one goes back into the MPRDA, there is no provision in the MPRDA that allows the imposition. One is the establishment of that fund. The second one is the imposition of a levy. And there is a principle in law that a subsidiary legislation can only deal with matters which are dealt with in principal legislation. So these are issues that one has. I'm not arguing whether it is a good or bad idea. I'm raising the issue of constitutionality, the issue around practicality. How are you going to impose that obligation that you have placed on a company that is outside? Going to beneficiation, the definition of black economic empowerment, and I paraphrase it, in the MPRDA includes beneficiation. The mining charter, both the original and the revised, have created a facility of offsetting. Basically, which means, instead of a company doing a 26%, you would say you do a 15% and the 11% is equated to your beneficiation activity. The question that we have to ask ourselves is it really going to promote beneficiation? Is the fact that I say company Anglo Platinum, we know that you are involved in processing. Don't do a 26%, do 15% and the other ones you do. It's an offset for beneficiation. Anglo Platinum is already doing beneficiation or processing. They may not go yet to the extent that the government wants, but they are doing something. Now, if you then impose that of you create that facility, let's say Anglo, you move from where you are now to where we want you to be. What additional transaction are they going to do in order for them to get that offer? Does it relate to current transactions that they've done? If it relates to current transactions that they've done, it means that they have to go back to the current BEs and say, we are cutting down your equity so that we can do beneficiation. So there are practical challenges also there. One is the relationship between offsetting and the MPRDA itself, which has no provision for offsetting. The other one, there are practical issues. And my question is, if we want to promote beneficiation, what are the instruments that we are going to use? Could one construe the offsetting as the incentive provided for in Section 26 of the MPRDA? Most likely not. So my question here is not around whether one should promote beneficiation or not. It is the instrument that is being used to promote that beneficiation, which is by way of offsetting. And if one were to look then in South Africa, what we'd have to start asking ourselves, is offsetting going to lead us to that? Because if we realize now that offsetting is not going to lead us to that, we then have to start looking for other instruments to allow us to then drive beneficiation, rather than 3 years down the line, we look back and say, offsetting a threat. So I'm letting the committee here, so we'll have to ask, when we say you can offset ownership with beneficiation, how are you going to do it? How is it going to be done? So if we then cannot answer on how it is going to be done, so we have to say, we'll have to start looking for other ways for us to promote beneficiation in South Africa. Beneficiation is something that has to happen, but it is the instruments that we use to drive that we have to look at. I started by quoting Machiavelli, where I raised the issue of resistance to change, but also connivance by those who are supposed to benefit from the change. In dealing with change, it is important that we also understand the psychology of change. It is not correct to assess employment equity in South Africa on the basis of the mining charter only. Because employment equity started in 1999. In terms of the Employment Equity Act, companies that qualify had to submit employment equity plans, and then every so often report. Now, the question that we have to start asking ourselves is, were companies just preparing the plan and then report and not implementing it? And then when the mining charter comes and is as a supplementary tool to what already existed, then there is a challenge of we have challenges or difficulties, we cannot comply. There are two pieces of legislation. One is the Employment Equity Act, where currently, between 1st of September and I think 3rd of October, companies are required to submit reports to the Department of Labor. It includes some of the mining companies who qualify. So they cannot give different figures, one to the Department of labor and another one to the Department of Mineral Resources. I'll talk about tendencies, but it is not the political tendencies that appears in the media a lot. But it is an issue that psychologists have studied, and it relates to subtle prejudice. And what they say is that in human beings, there is that tendency of favoring those that look like you. And then you look at those who don't look like you unfavorably. This is what the psychologists have determined. The question is, to what extent we then use that when we are dealing with employment equity? You have heard about the radio DJ of Jacaranda who accidentally used the K word on his colleague. And the question that many people are asking Is this a reflection of who he is? Or did he just come up by accident? And in listening to the debate on affirmative action, you can see that. And there are some figures. Unfortunately, because the department does not have figures relating to employment equity, I had to rely on an aggregate statistics from the Employment Equity Commission just to show this tendency. In South Africa, the majority of people who are economically active are black. And it is reflected there. This is figures from Employment Equity Report. It is then followed by white, colored, and then Indian. The total of economically active population in South Africa is 17,000. In other words, these are people between the ages of 15 and 65 who are employed or looking for employment. Now, if we were to look at the figures of employment, oftentimes we talk about unemployed. So I've changed it around and say figures of those who are employed. 70% is African, 76% is colored, 89% is white, 89% is Indian, and 95% is white, which then means only 5% of whites are unemployed. Now, this already starts telling us a problem that there is, looking at the economically active population. Again, looking at tendencies in numbers, this is just taking a 2009-2010 employment equity report where they looked at the movements within companies and they aggregated the figure. And looking at this, one would not be wrong if we had to say that it in some way or another would reflect what is happening in the mining sector also. If you look at percentage-wise, percentage of promotion in the economy in South Africa in 2009-2010, majority were white. Percentage-wise, there may be a difference in terms of numbers, but percentage-wise, majority was white, followed by black, and then colored, and then Indian. Skills Development, in terms of Skills Development Act, 48% to white, followed by Africans, Indians, and then colored. Now, we can ask ourselves the question here. Could be two reasons. One, either blacks don't want to go through skills development, and blacks, I'm using the political term for blacks, or there is that tendency of preference to those who look like you. Now, also look, people leaving. In other words, people whose jobs have been terminated or they resigned, they went somewhere else. Majority were white, followed by blacks, and then colored and Indians. And then recruitment. Also, majority, from that small portion of 2 million, which are economically active. In other words, all this activity around promotion, skills development, termination, and recruitment is coming from that figure there. Understand now, the question is, it is not only around males. The same pattern applies to women. So you look at the white women, they are the ones being promoted, they are the ones where skills development is taking place, they are the ones who are leaving and coming, and they are also the ones who are being recruited. Now, why I'm raising this is to indicate to the department that in the process of developing employment equity statistics, it is important that they also have these figures here, for one then to be able to analyze what is happening. So we can get this from, but it is at an aggregated level. We can get it from the Employment Equity Commission. But it is critical that the department also, in terms of regulation, which will not take long for them to put this into place, that they, instead of just requesting numbers of employment equity, but they would also ask movement within a specific company, so that then they can get a sense of what is happening in the mining, why is transformation not taking place. Because currently I can dream of reasons, but once I have statistics before me, I can then start asking myself, if recruitment is taking place here and not there, it's an indication that this is the area the problem is. So how then should we then intervene to make sure that recruitment, all this that is positive here, it is then spread. That we don't keep on relying on the 2 million actively, economically active South Africans to provide the skills for the rest of the Republic. So this is not that for the mining sector specifically, but I've used this to show, one, that there is a need for this type of statistics for the mining sector, but also to request the department to have something like this, so that one can then analyze, and when one is then called to the portfolio committee, at least there is a central base where we all gather that information, and we can then analyze that data. Now, in dealing again with change and transformation, which is a class of change, one will have to acknowledge, in the context of psychology, that I give a benefit of doubt to those who look like me. And those who don't look like me, I tend to raise my standards. Now, I'm going to say a controversial issue, which is my own observation. I've not done any study on that. But one thing that I've noticed with Africans is the tendency of not using those that look like you. You can look at a mining company. I own mining company, the CEO will not necessarily be someone who looks like me. This is what I'm trying to raise. And there are always excuses why. If we don't have skills, there are always excuses. I'm not saying this because they're better. This is not the issue. The issue is that which I have observed. Now, in talking about affirmative action, there is always this concept of merit. What I'm raising here is this psychologist raises the issue that if I belong to A group and I'm African, the tendency is for me not to question the credentials of that African. I take it for granted that he is good. Those who are not African, I want them to prove to me that they are good. And we take this into our work environment, we take it into our life. So this is what the psychologist is saying. And one of the examples that I then try to use is to say, when we hear about affirmative action, we say we support affirmative action, however, appointments must be on merit. As if you cannot appoint an affirmative action candidate on the basis of merit. The other one is, if we appoint them, they job hop. But these figures here are potentially telling you something different. The ones who are job hopping may not be the ones who are terminating and who are also being recruited. Again, this is where statistics becomes very important. That when someone says we cannot appoint them because they job hop, we have to say, where is the stat? Give us the figure so that we can analyze them and then find a way for us to intervene in that. The other one then is lack of skills. We do not have enough skills blessed. The question is, why don't you have enough skills blessed if there are 12 million economically active blessed? Why is it so difficult for you to get skilled black from the 12 million. But it is easy for you to get skilled white from the 2 million. But also we have to sustain, this is now 17 years after 1994. So if in 1994 I was 30 years old, means that today I'm going to be 47. It means that in 1986, you were 22. You were just leaving university if you had gone for a four-year degree. In other words, by the time of 1994, you had been working potentially for 8 years. So can we still keep on accepting the argument that there is lack of skills? Or cannot we then start coming back and say, if a white lady, a white gentleman can be a CEO at the age of 47, which person was 30 in 1994? Which person potentially finished university in 1986 at the age of 22? Why is it so difficult then to find skills amongst blacks who can become top managers? What is not happening for us to be able to get to that? Because if I say that I have 20 years in the mining sector, it means that 3 years, three of those 20 years, it was pre-1994. And 17 of those are post-1994. So why is it that you can become a CEO at the age of 47 because you have 20 years in the mining sector, and a black person cannot become a CEO at that level, at that age too? So again, I'm raising the issue of the importance of having statistics so that we can then start asking critical questions and not just be taken away by what everybody agrees to, that there is lack of skills, and then we accept it. We have to start asking, what, why is it that there is lack of skills? And if there is lack of skills, what skills are we inquiring? For instance, if you go today to the university, the mining engineering department, majority of the students there are black, from first, and it is at the level of 90%, from first year to fourth year. So what are the challenges that exist that we still complain about lack of skills? Looking again at HRD, the figures there are the percentage contribution by companies from their annual payroll in addition to what they do for in terms of the Skills Development Act. Number one, again, the issue of Section 77 of the Constitution, imposition of a levy. But also one will have to start asking, why is a weighting of 25% in the relation to the other elements in the revised mining charter? What was the rationale behind that? Because if one looks at the what is happening in the economy, the issue of ownership is still critical. We can debate whether it is broad or narrow, but the issue of ownership is still critical. It is true that skills development, human resource development is important, but when you give away, you are raising the level of importance of one compared to the other. But also important, in the revised charter, ownership does not have a weighting. So what are the implications of giving a weighting to some elements and no weighting to others? And why did the department do that? They may have a good reason why it was done, but one has to understand, especially as you then start interacting with companies in order to assist them to comply. In conclusion, it is true that transformation is a long way to go, but something has been achieved. I know that there are those who say that it is a failure, and I always ask myself, what does failure mean? If one writes an exam, you know that in order for you to pass, it's either 34%, 60%, or 40%. Unless we are construing that at the level of ownership, us, a man's company, there to be at 15% by last year, and therefore transformation has failed. We must also understand that the context within which certain elements of transformation have started taking place, some of them are just since 2004. There must also be consistency on the side of government when it comes to either BEO transformation in general. When government criticizes its own policies, the message that goes out is they are not serious about it anyway. So why should we be serious? It creates confusion. One is not saying that government should not analyze and reanalyze policies so that they can improve on it. This is not what I'm saying. But I hear a lot of government criticizing its own policies. And one and a half people say if government that is supposed to implement its own policies are not happy with the policies, so what should we do? And then we then blame the companies that have to implement and say they are not doing it. There is a need for the department to develop a database where it becomes an authority on the figures, so that we don't have disputes as to how do we measure employment equity, how do we measure ownership, how do we measure equity. Because this is what is happening now. Everybody goes to the stock exchange, gets figures from the stock exchange, and they do their own calculations, say this is where we are. Chamber of Mines comes and also does its own thing, then say this is where we are. The department also comes and says this is where we are. There is a need for one to have one repository of the source of the data. And then we can then play around and analyze, provided that we are able then to explain as to how we came to the figure that we have. What has been happening so far? There are some who are playing a numbers game. Now, if I were going to be asked whether transformation has been a failure, my answer would be, it has not been a failure. We may complain about the extent of transformation, the speed, the rate, but because it is moving slow, I cannot say that my car is not moving. It is just moving at a speed that I don't want it to move. So I then must find for ways in which I can improve my car so that it can then be moved faster. Because one must also be realistic. Before the MPRDA, there were very few, if none, black-owned mining companies in South Africa. Today, even if there are 10, they are there. The debate is now, how do we move from 10 to 20? Not that 10 is a failure. It is the debate is now, how do we move from what we have and improve on what we have? It is true that they listed the top 10 black millionaires in South Africa. And for us, fortunately, most of them, if not all of them, come from the mining sector. For those of us who were involved at that time in that process, is a source of pride. Because before then there were zero. Now at least there are 10. So the question now becomes, how do we improve on the 10? It's not how do we bring the 10 to zero. And oftentimes, and that is why in the beginning I said that broad-based ownership is commercially a disaster. Because there are those in the sector who like broad-based ownership, not because it is beneficial. It is because they can divide and rule. Because it is easy to, it is difficult for to bring people who are fighting amongst themselves. And it happens where there are a lot of people involved in one transaction. They fight. When I was in the department, there are times where we had to be facilitators and mediators amongst the people who are fighting amongst themselves. And the 74% just said, sort out your problem. And as a regulator, you had to deal with it. So my committee, my presentation here today was to raise questions and to say that what we need now is not to destroy what has been done, is to say if we have not been able to arrive at what we wanted to, where we wanted to be, what are the issues that we have to address in order for us to move? And this is how change is. Change is not an event. Change is a process. And one must always be able to say, we were supposed to be here, we didn't arrive, what made us not get here? And then say, what is it that we have to do to take us there? Let's not treat transformation as an event. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rocha, on the presentation. I don't know whether anywhere in the document that you have prepared you have a section that deals with recommendations.
I think it's in the principal document, not in the.
There's one dated the 14th September, which is the one you presented. There's one dated 24 August.
Yeah, but there is also a written document, a prose, not a PowerPoint presentation, that was presented right at the beginning when the committee invited comments.
A submission?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And on that one, I've not changed anything. It remains as it has.
All right. Let's see if we can find it. And if not, I'm sure the committee secretary would provide us with that. So it does contain
the
recommendation.
Yeah.
Very well.
Thank you. Honorable members, there you have the presentation. Let's engage.
Honorable Chani, Honorable Bigani, all right.
Can Honorable Chairman explain his understanding of NPC?
Yes, Honorable Bigani.
Thank you, Chair. I was just going to comment on the psychological class that you just had. It was very interesting. But I don't know, my view is that for one, I don't know who's J. Rocha Consulting. I don't know what they do. So the views that I expressed here gives me the impression that it might not necessarily refer to mining, but just business in the Republic of South Africa as a whole. And part of it might refer to issues which are constitutionally there, but not necessarily going in the direction that you are giving us. And some of the issues mentioned might be more appropriate in areas of such as public service and administration, for example. Especially come to talk to your views and approach on human resource development, employment equity, public enterprise in relation to your approach to BEEs. It's more general. I wish there could have been more direct issues as to how best then can this be applied to the mining charter. Taking cognizance, of course, of the relevance of the presentation, it's mind-boggling, it's worth questioning, but here my individual feel is that it's not assisting much when it comes to the issues of the mining charter that we are dealing with. And then coming to the equity broad-based empowerment table that you showed us just now. I'd just like to ask, you said that this pie, the pie presentation that you gave us, was more on what should be or how we should be viewing equity. Now, my question would be of interest. Is the person now who's a mine owner, who's also claiming that out of the work that I have done and what ownership we have from our four grandfathers, how best then do you expect such a person to fairly turn around what you say should be turned around in terms of the other 12% that is owned to become the 75%, for example? Just to give a sense of how realistically can this be applied, the pie that you've just given us, to try and relate it to the South African situation of the mining industry of previously disadvantaged people. How best can this be implemented? Thank you, Chair. I don't think I have further questions on this.
Thank you very much. Is your hand up, Honorable Sondo and Honorable Jobo?
Yes, Chairperson, thank you very much. Looking at the presentation, we were shuttling from this document to that document in order to get some answers to some issues that were not clear to us. I would have thought that on the basis of all the questions raised here and the probabilities assumed, one would have juxtaposed the content of the presentation with the recommendations, and then in recommendations at the end of the paper. But one is left now with just a sense of understanding the basis from which the presentation is made. If we look, Chairperson, at the ownership element of the charter, the critique there is that our broad-based or the broad-based ownership as captured in the charter is a commercial disaster, and it undermines meaningful participation. Now, one would have one would sought to understand that if the presenter understands that a line starts with a dot, why would you say at the beginning of the charter, whilst the charter is still under surgery, why would you say forthwith that it undermines meaningful participation? Because we are looking at how applicably can this charter be, and that is why we are seeking your intellect and your thinking. If you could just assist us on that one. And the other one that I just had a very, very naive question on was, on your measurement tools that the charter is having, you had all these questions that you have there. And the literal question that came to mind to me was, what's your take then? Here you are raising the litany of the questions on the measuring tool of the charter. What are you guiding us on? If, for instance, you say everything that it contains it would not take us off the ground. I was really entertained by the analogy of that psychologist, and really I would beg to differ. And I would say it's a literal analogy for a psychology to think that people would bundle people into an entity even if those people would fail that particular entity just because they are looking like you. I took it to be very, very literal. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Njobo, then Honorable Khulodu.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Mine, I've got two questions. The tendons of look-alikes and the outgroup. How would you relate this concept to queries of nepotism? For example, many father members in the employment against many Mofokeng. Number two, for example, the MTN share scheme is commercial a disaster. What form of broad-based ownership, in your view, could be a success? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khulodu.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me thank the presenter for the presentation that he has for us. Chair, actually, I just wanted to comment on the question of the ownership. I want to listen to what the Honorable Sondu here was saying on the broad-based ownership. I don't understand really when the presenter was talking about the EES politically sound, good politicking, commercially a disaster, undermines meaningful participation. To me, I think this government actually wanted to start from somewhere in order to empower the historically disadvantaged people of this country. We had to start from somewhere, and of course we are going up. Like what he said now, we've got now about 10 black rich people in this country. That's what the newspaper was saying the other day. I believe that gradually that number is going to grow. We have to start from somewhere. To me, that pie chart over there, I know that he's talking about the other, that it's about 17%, that those people are the most people who are benefiting than the other big, what to call. I just wanted to check from him as to what is it that he can come up with, which method actually can you come up with that is going to try and address this problem of transformation in our country. Yeah. Can you come up with a solution? Because, you know, criticizing is not going to help us. We need to find a solution. All of us here, actually, we want to find solutions to address the question of ownership in our wealth. So that I think it will assist us to criticize and come up also with a very sound recommendation thereof. Thank you very much.
All right. So those are the questions, and indeed we found your main document. It looks like this. Can I get that? Because mine is in the bundle. It looks like this, honorable members. It's a thick document. And we found that. And looking at the, I think you are also raising quite pertinent questions that we must, making the assessment of this public hearing and what to do with the charter, we must look at as the portfolio committee. And the first area that I would want clarity on is you're making reference to the element of ownership, and the other questions have already been asked by the honorable members. But what I want to know is, given your experience in the field of mining, with the current pace of transformation, for instance, these reports from DMR that were less than 9% in terms of ownership patterns, other formations even pitching it at a far less percentage than that. For the moment, we put aside the Chamber of Mines, 28%. Do you believe that we will be able to attain at least the 26% come 2014 at the pace in which transformation is taking place in the mining industry? Because as we're conducting oversights, we engage mining companies, we interrogate them on their ownership structures, and all what you find, without exception, is that we have got a pipeline. We are working on attaining the 26%. And meanwhile, the current position is less than 15% in a particular company. So your views on that, whether we will be able to achieve the new target. Now, on procurement, you're raising discomfort in terms of the ability of DMR to basically deal and enforce the provisions of procurement. Do you believe that if we beef up the capacity within DMR in terms of inspectorate, we will not be able to then enforce the compliance with this element? And indeed, in terms of the Social Development Fund, you are raising quite a pertinent question, which we must follow up, because it's one thing to have something on paper and another thing to actually have the implementation of that which is the budget. So it's very important that we know. At one stage, we had asked the department, for instance, when it comes to the funding, both for the social fund as well as the funding provisions for human resource development, in terms of who will administer this fund. Is there a central fund into which these contributions must be made? And the answer was no. It's just the expenditure that is expected from mining companies, that by this time they must have spent so much percent of their payroll or of their turnover, whatever the situation is. Indeed, it's a loose arrangement, because you, if there is no central fund that would receive these contributions, then you might as well, fold, because you would be then relying on the mining companies themselves to basically incur that expenditure. On the beneficiation, we heard from the previous presenter that there is a call that we need to divorce beneficiation from the mining charter. What's your take? You seem to be inclined also that this element is misplaced, and particularly so that we have a beneficiation strategy in place which aims to establish a fully fledged beneficiation industry. Now, I think your arguments were gravitating towards questioning whether now the charter is seeking to substitute ownership requirements with diluting them with, you know, the element of beneficiation. So yes, I think please respond to those, and then indeed we will deal with the rest of the document where you are raising the recommendation. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the committee will have to accept and understand that the process of us coming here has been going on for over 6 months. So that is why you have to shuffle papers. Because we were requested over 6 months ago to respond to your invitation, which we did. We were then given dates in which we would present here, which I came. And so as you come and you are told this is the time frame that you have, you adjust your PowerPoint presentation to confine yourself to that time. So that is why this is what you have there.
I wonder if it's possible, actually, subject to correction. There is a presenter actually from Pumala. Her flight is set up at 12. I wonder if we could maybe move these responses from Jay Roka so that we give her the opportunity so that she presents, because her flight is set up at 12.
Could you disturb the process, the flow? You could have, should have raised that earlier on. Otherwise, now the questions asked. We're about to finish with this presenter. The questions were asked. What is remaining out of him is to respond. He's starting to respond now. We can't in the middle. Otherwise, we'll lose the flow of the discussions. Over to you.
And also, just to add, I changed my flight also from 12 o'clock to 1 o'clock. So I had to accommodate the committee this morning. I did not introduce the company because I don't think that I came here to advertise J. Russia Consulting. I came here to present what I was the company was responding to an invitation. So I didn't see the need to advertise as to who J. Russia Consulting is. The pie chart that I showed there was for illustrative purposes. It was in the context of responding to the issue of the challenges around the debate of broad-based ownership, not broad-based empowerment. There is a difference. Broad-based ownership is the way you bring many people to become shareholders in a company. Broad-based empowerment deals with ownership, deals with procurement, deals with employment equity, a lot of things which you normally would say the seven pillars of the mining charter. So that pie chart that was just to say we have to look at the way in which we deal with broad-based. Now, are there ways in which it can be implemented? Yes. In the context of the 26%, minus the minimum 26%, the department in the past has talked to companies that instead of them focusing on 26% in the company, that they would reflect that 26% in the creation of black-owned companies. And there are companies that have transacted in that way. So it can be done. What I'm trying to raise the issue here is broad-based ownership is not necessarily the panacea that we all think it is. That is why I said, and I was so scared of raising it here in front of politicians, that it is politically sound. Now, if one wants to challenge, then it is fine. But this is what I'm raising. Having been there, having seen this, I'm raising that broad-based ownership is commercially a disaster for the simple reason that you will never be able to have meaningful participation by someone who has a 1% in one company that is not even listed. This is what I'm trying to say. The way in which If you have a shareholders agreement, the way in which participation in the board is determined, let's say, for every 10% or every 5% that you have, you have one director. You have a broad-based ownership where the majority of, if not all of them, have 4%, and only two have 10%. The majority of the people who have 4% will not be participating in the board. They will not be employed. This is what I'm raising. So it is one looking at the practicality of the issue, that if you want meaningful participation, and you then go and subdivide the 26%, you are not going to end up with meaningful participation because of the way in which things happen within the sector. The issue of what form of broad-based, what has been happening in the sector was, you get a 26%. Let me go back. The idea of 26%, of 25% plus one vote, was on the basis of minority protection. Huh? You then find in the practice of the 26%, that 26% is split. In which case, you don't have that minority protection anymore. So you don't find that the 26% is held in a block. It is 26% split. So while the original intention was minority protection, the way in which it is being done undermines that minority protection. Therefore, you will not have meaningful participation in the sector. And a minority shareholder does not operate much. I think, Chairperson, on the issue that whether we are going to be able to achieve the 26%, I would want to advise the committee to look at specific companies. It was whether company A, which is at this stage at 9%, will be able to achieve 26%. Because in order for the industry to get to the 26%, there must be companies that are at 26%, there are other companies who might be below 26%, and there are companies who are going to be above 26%. So my response to that question is, there are companies who are going to get to 26%. I have a question on the industry itself, because there are different players in the industry who are going to be at different stages of the equity. But are there companies who are going to get to 26%? The answer is yes. There are, because there are even some who are already there, and some of them were above the 26%. But as to the industry, because of the dynamics of the industry and the various players in the industry, I'm not so sure about the industry in terms of average of the industry. I'm not so sure about that. On the beneficiation, I'm not proposing the withdrawal or taking out beneficiation from the definition of broad-based black economic empowerment or the mining charter. What I'm asking is, there is something called offsetting of ownership against beneficiation, or offsetting beneficiation against ownership. That offsetting concept is what I'm questioning, not the beneficiation. And my question is, are we going to be able to achieve beneficiation by offsetting? What is the definition of beneficiation? There is a statutory definition that the MPRDA and the Precious Metals Act has. But my understanding is it is beyond processing, because for instance, for a platinum to become saleable, it has to be taken out of the rock, processed, go through a chemical process, and then get to the platinum bar. Now, the question that we have is, to what extent then we take that bar beyond? And this is where I'm looking at beneficiation. I don't know whether this is what the department looks at. So I don't want beneficiation to be taken out of the chart. It's the issue of offsetting beneficiation against ownership. I've explained why the charter, in my view, the charter undermines the MPRDA, the meaningful participation. What are you guiding us on? As a former regulator and a researcher, one thing that I have learned is assisting in the process by asking questions is not necessarily by giving solutions. What we were requested to do here is to comment on the mining charter. I've made recommendations in the principal document which is before the committee, and they're contained in there. So my guidance is in the written document. Here we were requested to highlight certain elements of the written documents that we had presented, and this is what I've attempted to do. I hope I've responded all the answers. Yeah. Thank you, Chapel.
Yes. Do you believe there's something that has not been answered, or understood?
Not really. I just wanted to thank the presenter for referring us to another document instead of him just in a snapshot giving us his guidance on this issue. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Okay.
Perhaps.
No. Fine. Thank you very much, Mr. Rocha.
Thank you.
And we will indeed go through that document. You know, this process is not going to just end because you are not dealing with a matter that is so easy and straightforward. So I think issues that you have raised are going to assist us in the actual assessment of what is it that we need to do, because it is incumbent upon us that we ensure that we strengthen the mining charter and that we clarify certain issues so that companies, when they implement, when they appear before us, they know exactly what to talk to and what measurements are we to use. So thank you very much.